WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this fun day, Monday, April 10th, 2017. And as always, on Monday afternoon's version of Current Sports, we will do our best to recap the fun-filled, long sporting weekend in Mid-Michigan and beyond. A ton to get to, folks, which include, of course, the Masters, as Sergio Garcia, after 73 starts, can finally call himself a winner of a major. And what a way to do it, going into a playoff against Justin Rose. How fun was that to watch last night? Of course, yesterday, the Detroit Red Wings said goodbye to the Joe. That's right, Joe Louis Arena will no longer now be the home of the Detroit Red Wings, as they will now move about a mile down the road to Little Caesars Arena next season. It was an emotional moment as about 90 Red Wings alum said goodbye to the barn. We will talk about that moment with Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. Helene was there to witness that moment, a red carpet ceremony. Just really emotional, folks. You don't want to miss that chat, as Helene will talk about her entire day from the moment she entered the Joe till the moment she packed up her things and left as a reporter covering the Wings for a final time at the Joe. You don't want to miss that. We also have breaking news concerning the Michigan State University hockey program. Yes, the program is said to have found its new head coach. In just a moment, we will invite to the show Jason Ruff, Michigan State hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports, who will talk about the said hire for the hockey program. You don't want to miss that. And later on in the show, we will talk about the Detroit Pistons saying goodbye to the Palace of Auburn Hills tonight, as the Pistons will, of course, will play their final home game of the regular season. They will not make the playoffs. The first time since 1983 that both the Wings and the Pistons have not made the postseason. Crazy right there, right? Just really can't believe that. But the Pistons say goodbye to the Palace of Auburn Hills. We'll talk briefly about that. And we will, of course, have weekend winners for you. We're taking your calls as usual. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also join the conversation via Facebook.com/currentsports, where we are currently live streaming the show, and even tweet us at WKAR_sports or at Al Martin WKAR. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with breaking news being reported by SpartanNation.com. Michigan State hockey appears to have a new head coach after Tom Anastas stepped down earlier this year, according to Scout.com as well. MSU alumnus Dan Cole will be the new man behind the bench for the Michigan State hockey program. Cole has been the head coach of the USA Hockey National Team Development Program since 2013. The former Spartan and Pontiac native spent parts of 12 years playing in the NHL and also served as the head coach for the Grand Rapids Griffins for 3 years in the early 2000s. Now, Cole has said that he considered Michigan State his dream job and should have a good handle on the young prospects coming up through the ranks due to his time with USA Hockey. And again, in just a moment, we will invite live here in Studio West, Jason Ruff, USA Hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports, to talk about the new hire for the Michigan State hockey team. MSU baseball rebounded after a 5-game losing streak by sweeping Fresno State in a 3-game series over the weekend. The series had to be moved from East Lansing to Grand Rapids due to wet field conditions at McLane Baseball Stadium. crazy, right, as the Red Cedar River overflowed, causing for many social media posts. The Spartans outscored their opponent 27-11 over the course of the weekend to improve to 18-11 overall. Meanwhile, Michigan State University softball went 2-1 over the weekend against conference foe Penn State. This series also had to be moved, of course, due to flooding from MSU's campus as the two teams faced off at Eastern Michigan's home field. The Spartans moved to 21-12 on the year following the weekend and 5-4 in conference play. The hometown Lansing Lugnuts opened the season with a four-game sweep over the Great Lakes Loons. The Luggies took the first two games in a doubleheader on Friday before escaping the weekend with a pair of one-run victories. Lansing was just one of two Midwest League's teams to come out of the opening weekend unscathed, while the West Michigan Whitecaps went 3-1. The Luggies are on the road for two more games before playing their home opener on Thursday. Well, to return to home on Thursday against the Lake County Captains. And what a home opener it was on Saturday. They had a block party in which one section of downtown Lansing was closed off right in front of Cooley Law School Stadium's food, fun, and a lot of laughter on that beautiful Saturday afternoon. All right, the Detroit Tigers are wrapping up their four-game series against the Boston Red Sox as we speak. But as they look to take the series after winning two of the first three.
Here's the 0-2. Driven toward left field. He hit it hard again. Benintendi going back to the wall and gone. Damage.
Yes, how about Nicholas Castellanos, right? Formerly known as Nick Castellanos. Detroit won its home opener on Friday by a final score of 5-4 behind a strong performance by last year's rookie sensation, Michael Fulmer. Jordan Zimmermann led the way to a 4-1 dub on Saturday, and the dreaded bullpen blew a late lead in a 7-5 loss on Sunday. It happens every single year. This bullpen, you just don't know what you're going to get, folks. JV, Justin Verlander, and Chris Sale are dueling it out today. That is a powerhouse of a pitching matchup. Looking forward to watching that one as the Tigers look to improve to 4-2 on the year. Again, I believe that matchup is getting underway as we speak. In 3 minutes, a 1:10 p.m. first pitch for that one, and we will keep you updated throughout the afternoon and throughout the hour as that game rolls along. Last night saw the end of an era for Wet Rings hockey. In more ways than one, Detroit played its last game in the historic Joe Louis Arena as they sent through a building out in style with a 4-1 dub over the New Jersey Devils. The sold-out crowd created a playoff atmosphere for the Joe's farewell as the Red Wings' 25-year playoff streak came to an official end. Dozens of Red Wings alum showed up for the festivities following the game, including Stevie Y, Steve Yzerman, Scotty Bowman, Nick Lidstrom, Vladimir Kostyukov. Also, most of the fans stuck around following the win as the post-game ceremony finally wrapped up nearly 3 hours after the game ended.
And then ultimately, what I must say, playing in this building, it's a unique building. It's beautiful in its simplicity. The players come on the ice. It has a great ice surface. The boards are comfortable. You get hit into these boards. They're a little bit soft. It's a unique arena. It's got its own charm and its own character. It hasn't changed a whole lot since 1978. But ultimately, when I look up in the stands and I see the fans, when I'm here today and I watch this game today, this is what it's been like for every player that's played here since.
Yeah, Stevie Y with some thoughts. Again, honoring the Joe in the final game, a Detroit Red Wings win over the New Jersey Devils. We'll come back to that in just a moment as we will invite to the show Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat writer for the Free Press. And just as the Red Wings said farewell to the Joe last night, the Detroit Pistons will say goodbye to the Palace of Auburn Hills tonight as both teams get ready to move to Little Caesars Arena next season. The Pistons have already been eliminated from playoff contention, but expect a sold-out crowd as the Washington Wizards come to town for one last game at the Palace. The game will be nationally televised on TNT at 8 p.m. In more NBA news, Russell Westbrook's historic season got even more impressive last night. Russ broke the Big O's record for most triple-doubles in a single season by notching his 42nd in a dramatic fashion. Oscar Robertson's record gone. How about that? Westbrook finished the game with 50 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, and a 36-foot buzzer beater to give the Thunder a 106-105 victory over the Denver Nuggets. Westbrook got a brief ovation from the away crowd after breaking Oscar's record, and then Russell proceeded to score the Thunder's last 15 points on his way to eliminating the Nuggets from playoff contention. All right, congratulations to Matthew Stafford, who is entering his ninth year as the Detroit Lions starting quarterback. News came out this weekend that he is officially in his first year of fatherhood. His wife, Kelly Stafford, announced on Instagram that the couple welcomed twin daughters to the world on March 31st this year. Early in the year, Stafford said he was getting very anxious for fatherhood, saying, quote, "I'm assuming it's going to be a big change. Not as many naps, which is disappointing," end quote. Congratulations to the Stafford family. And last, but certainly not least, after 73 appearances in majors without a victory, pro golfer Sergio Garcia finally got the proverbial monkey off his back as Garcia outdueled Justin Rose on Sunday to win the Masters and clinch his first green jacket. Crazy. First major victory for Sergio. It looked as though it might escape him yet again, however, as Garcia missed a 6-foot putt on the last hole that sent the match into a playoff following an errant tee shot from Rose on the first playoff hole. Garcia gave himself 2 putts from 12 feet to win the most storied tournament in golf. Sergio drained his birdie putt to win the playoff in convincing fashion. How about that? Sergio Garcia, the Spaniard, taking home the green jacket yesterday. We will have more from the Masters in just a moment as well. Again, folks, if you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
But at its core, it's always been a rink, a barn. And that is said with a touch of reverence. A place where players were known by a nickname.
Iserman on the ice, where he should be.
D-Mac, the magic man.
What a move! Scores! Wow. Oh, but that's Suki and Dick, that's a beauty!
Z, Nick, and Mr. Hockey, who stopped by for a visit at the rink's very beginnings as he was near his hockey playing end.
Representing all of hockey with great distinction for 5 decades, number 9.
It's a place where cheers were bellowed, octopi were flung and twirled, and songs that ended with a throng yelling South Detroit were a part of every win. Red Wings hockey was about the Joe, and we're about to say goodnight one last time.
Took the
Oh, boy. It's played during every Detroit Red Wings game. And we heard it for a final time yesterday. The Journeys. Don't Stop Believing. Goodbye to Joe Louis Arena. What an emotional ceremony that started actually before puck drop against the New Jersey Devils. Downtown Detroit. So cool. They actually had a red carpet going up into the entrance of the Joe as fans lined both sides of the red carpet, welcoming countless famed names in Detroit Red Wings lore, fans taking pictures, getting autographs, and, you know, not even the game aside here. I mean, just watching that on TV. And this is coming from a dude who never even watched. Well, I should say watched it in person at the Joe. Never been to Joe Louis Arena to witness a Detroit Red Wings game in person. I got a bit emotional watching that. Flipping between that and the Masters last night. That was fun. That was fun, I must say. And then, of course, after the game, you know, they had Joe on the ice. Written on the ice. And then you had the alum sitting in chairs. I mean, what a ceremony, right? That is how it's done, folks. And I hear a lot of mixed emotions from fans and media alike, especially media, because the media room is not the best media room in sports. Let's just say that. So the media are certainly looking forward to the move to Little Caesars Arena. But the fans are, too. I mean, this closes a storied chapter in Detroit professional sports. And now, about a mile down the road, the Wings will play at a beautiful new stadium, Little Caesars Arena. Not only will it be home of the Detroit Red Wings, but also the Detroit Pistons. The Pistons will celebrate one final night at the Palace of Auburn Hills tonight. A bit odd, seeing as though, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, both the Wings and the Pistons not in the playoffs for the first time in 1 year, dating all the way back to 1983. A long time since we've seen this, folks. And I want to hear your thoughts on last night's ceremony. It was an emotional one, to say the least. I wanted to play before that Journey hit. I wanted to play, of course, the final montage that Fox Sports Detroit put together, which was great. Great. And again, that was the audio of it, but the visual showed the lights for one last time turning out at Joe Louis Arena. And then you heard a brief moment of silence. Oh, unbelievable stuff. I wanted to play that before we kicked off the show. I want to hear your thoughts on the wing saying goodbye to Joe Louis Arena. 517-355-WKAR. Again, 517-355-9527. Again, when it comes to the game, the Wings topping the Devils 4-1 last night. Way to go out with the win, Wings. And get this, Riley Sheehan had two goals. Not one, but two goals. That was what was so odd about last night for me watching that game. Riley Sheehan had two goals after being held scoreless in his first 79 games this year. Wow. I mean, where have you been, Riley? I guess you got up too to celebrate that final game at the Joe. Interesting there. Tomas Tatar also scored. Jimmy Howard stopped 24 shots for the Red Wings. Again, failing to make the playoffs, though, for the first time since 1990. So bittersweet, to say the least. In about 10 minutes, we will invite to the show Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. Again, call in to be a part of the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Mike, I see you're on line one. Don't go anywhere because I want to get you your call right after we invite our first guest for today's Current Sports. I want to get to some breaking news that I saw this morning, and both him and I, we were texting back and forth about this breaking news concerning the Michigan State hockey team hiring its new head coach. It's being reported, I saw first by SpartanNation.com, Hondo Carpenter reporting that Michigan State hockey appears to have a new head coach after Tom Anastas decided to step down not too long ago. MSU alumnus Danton Cole is said to be the new man in charge of Michigan State hockey. Right now, we invite Jason Ruff to the show, Michigan State hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports. Jay Ruff, first off, how was your weekend, man? You have a good one?
Oh, it was great. I went over to Chicago to watch the championship game of the Frozen Four at the UC. And I tell you what, that was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I'm already planning with my family to go to the one that's going to be held in Detroit in 2 years, at 2019.
I tell you, you just live, breathe, and eat hockey
exactly.
All year round.
Well,
it's what you do, Jay Ruff.
That is what I do.
I want to talk about the hire for Michigan State. It said that Danton Cole will be the new guy, the new man in charge of this program now. Surprise it all for you.
A little bit, but not really surprised. But first off, I want to say to all the Spartan hockey fans out there, congratulations. This is what you guys have wanted for years now. This is what Danton Cole has wanted for a while. You can tell by his tweets that he was reported to say when Anastas resigned. You could tell he wanted it. Everyone's getting what they want. Now Dan's going to have to come in and make this work. But I'm not really I was a little bit surprised because during the Frozen Four, there was so much talk that George Gwozdecky would get this job. I mean, I was talking to people. I'll give you a perfect example. I ran into Don Lucia, head coach of the Minnesota Golden Gophers on Michigan Avenue, and we were talking. Even he thought it was going to be George Gwozdecky.
Did he?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
So, and then all of a sudden, we get the news last night from a reporter with the Denver Pioneer Press, and saying that George Gwozdecky is going to stay with his high school team, Valor Christian High School in Colorado. And now you're thinking, all right, so is Danton Cole going to get the job? And, of course, as soon as I get out of the shower, it's news starts coming down that Danton Cole's getting the job. And it's been a whirlwind ever since, pretty much.
So with that being said, Jay Ruff, because I also thought that George Gwozdecky was going to be the man. I mean, you know, if you remember back during the Ron Mason days, you definitely remember George Gwozdecky. I mean, he was assistant coach with Mason from 84 to 89. And, you know, he was actually back in town last year for the funeral, or the memorial, I should say, of Ron Mason at Mount Ice Arena. And he was present there. And I saw a few local interviews from him about the impact that Ron Mason had. But you heard his name, again, as you stated, thrown around a lot and possibly leading the pack. Do you believe it was a situation that, you know, when in telling that story where you heard that Gwozdecky was going to stay with his high school team, do you think it was maybe Gwozdecky saying, you know what, do you think it was offered to him first? I should ask you that.
I think it was offered. I mean, I'd be shocked if it wasn't, but I like to think that Gwozdecky sat down, thought about it, and decided, you know, he's going to be 64 this summer.
Right.
Does he really want to leave Colorado, which he's had his home there for going on over a decade? Does he really want to come to a D1 college and start a five-year rebuild? Because this is what this is. This is a rebuild. MSU hockey needs to be rebuilt. I like to think that he just thought about it and said, you know what, he's happy at Valor Christian High School. And if you look at some articles that were written about Valor Christian earlier this year, it talks about how Gwozdecky was just so happy and building up these young men and recruiting them, not really recruiting them, but bringing them up, instilling them the right character, and really developing them as men and hockey players.
The background of Danton Cole, what makes his background suitable to take over this program in its weary state right now?
You know, I think there's a lot of things about Danton Cole that remind me a little bit of Tom Izzo.
Really?
To be honest, he's very tenacious. He's hard-nosed. He loves MSU almost to a fault. And he's going to come in here and give you 200%. Mm-hmm. This is the job. He even said, he called it a dream job, as you said earlier. He wanted this job. Now he's got it. And now he's going to have the chance to do kind of what Tom Izzo did way back when, in like, I think it was 95, I think it was, or 94, when he came in and make this program his own. He has to prove himself, because the background that he has, he's going to have to prove himself. He doesn't have that history of winning consistently at the collegiate level, mm-hmm. but I think he's up to the talent challenge. He has the intangibles, Al. Plus, he's only 50 years old, so he's going to be here for a while.
You mentioned something I found quite interesting in your last answer there, Jay Ruff, talking about this will be a five-year rebuild. So you don't believe that, you know, Cole can come in immediately and possibly lead this team to a Big Ten championship or get him in the NCAA tournament? This is going to take a minute.
Well,
so temper those expectations.
I don't think it'll take 5 years.
Okay.
I think I think Hollis will probably want Gwozdecki in to commit for at least 5 years so you can get the program in a stable place and then maybe hand things off to a successor. But I think it will take a few years. Hockey rebuilds usually take between 3 and 5 years. The difference between Michigan State is there is talent on this roster.
Mm-hmm.
There are guys who have potential to be good players at the collegiate level. And what Cole is going to have to be his bread and butter is identifying and developing talent, especially that ladder pout, that developing talent. And a lot's going to depend on what kind of staff he can bring in. But I think if he brings in a good staff, I think he can develop this team and get them competitive by next year. Big Ten championship maybe in a few years, but I expect consistently competitive hockey starting at the very least next year.
Again, if you haven't heard, Danton Cole is said to be the name to take over the Michigan State hockey program. Cole was a player at Michigan State from 85 to 89, was a member of the 1986 national championship team as a player. Cole won a Stanley Cup with the New Jersey Devils in 1995. He has considerable coaching credentials, coaching 3 years with the University of Alabama Huntsville and taking the Chargers to the NCAA tournament. When you look at the makeup of this squad right now, Jay Ruff, how good do you believe this team can be next season?
You know, it's difficult to say because, remember, you have Notre Dame coming to the conference next year who is coming off just a sort of shellacking in the Frozen Four at the hands of Denver. So it's not going to get any easier for Michigan State. I think they can be competitive. I think they could probably push for maybe a fifth or fourth place spot in that middle of the pack. It depends on how – I mean, there's a lot of facets that go into this, whether some guys take to what Cole's trying to preach to them, whether guys not. There's a lot of moving parts to this. But I think Michigan State can be competitive at least for the next year or two in that mid-range spot as Cole gets his recruits in, coaches up the guys that are already on the roster, and really pushes for a Big Ten championship. This may not be considered a home run hire, but certainly an RBI double.
I like that. Well put. Jason Ruff, again, MSU hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports. And Jay Ruff, you just mentioned how you were in Chicago witnessing the Frozen Four and Denver.
Denver.
My goodness. When you watch a team like Denver, you know, go and win a national title, and you compare that to what you've seen here in East Lansing, I mean, what are the noticeable differences?
I saw tape-to-tape passes and passes that shouldn't be made. That's what I saw first and foremost. I saw moves that you couldn't even get done in a video game. I was sitting with one of my
friends. There's a massive talent difference.
But I think a lot of that is coaching, and I think a lot of that is development. Michigan State hockey is getting, in Danton Cole, a much better individual in terms of credentials, in terms of expertise, in terms of knowing the game, and in terms of being a Spartan, I guess you could say, than Tom Manassas. It's a step up for them, make no mistake. But when you look at Denver, they're just on a whole nother planet.
Tom Manassas hired a few years ago, I believe 2011, right?
2011
was when Tom Manassas was hired. And you heard Cole's name thrown around a bit during that time. He'd even Gwozdecki, to a certain degree. Why wasn't Cole hired during that time, J-Ruff? Because in many regards, many people looked at Tom Manassas being hired as an out-of-the-box hire.
I agree. I think maybe Hollis was thinking, and this is a maybe, I'm not inside Hollis's head, but I think maybe he might have thought that Manassas would do a better job marking the program than Cole would. Remember, Michigan State hockey was a much different place then than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, MSU was down. They needed someone to kind of bring it back up to that contender level,
right?
And I think maybe Hollis thought that he could get away with an out-of-the-box hire, see if it works, see if it doesn't. That was one case it didn't work. But now MSU needs help. They need someone to come in and just really instill a bunch of energy, confidence, maybe in a little bit of a kick in the pants, who knows, a la Tom Izzo, or a harsh word, I guess you could say. But they're in a different place now, and I think Danton Cole fits. He has the intangibles, and he's the right guy for this job.
What's considered a success for this team next season?
I think if they hover around a 500 record, I don't know if they have to get to a 500, but if they hover around and if they're competitive in the Big Ten. Plus, you got to beat Michigan. And one more thing before I get out of here, Al, I want to mention, you've got a new coach coming in at Michigan State. You've got Red Berenson seemingly near the end of his career. I don't know if he's going to stay on another year or not.
Is Red going to retire? Because I'm hearing rumors out there that he may hang it up.
I'll believe it when I see it. I've gotten to that point. But we'll know in the next couple days for sure. But
okay. You
got to imagine he's getting close to the end. If it's not going to retire this year, it's got to be soon. And you have the Joe Lewis closing. You think about it. We're closing a chapter in the history of hockey in Michigan. We're getting into a new era here.
We certainly are. Any memories from the Joe? I know you're from Chicago. I know you're a Blackhawks fan, but you're here in Michigan as a student at Michigan State University. You've been to a few Red Wings games. Any memories from the Joe at all, J-Ro?
I think my biggest memory from the Joe is actually from this year. I went to the duel in the D between Michigan State and Michigan, and just the atmosphere, the game itself was just too, like a sword fight. One guy would get an advantage and the other guy would come back, and it was back and forth both ways. One team would score and the other team would score. It was one of those games with just a great atmosphere that you hate to see a team lose that game. You didn't want it to end, and eventually it did in the shootout. So that's probably my favorite memory to take away from a really historic arena.
So your memory has nothing to do with the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, unfortunately, no. So you kind of walked into that one, Al, though.
Definitely. J-Ruff, tell our listeners out there how they can read your work, my friend.
Twitter, @Jason_R_Ruff, or on the web, Impact89FM/sports under the hockey tab. And I also host our award-winning podcast, Behind the Mask. We'll probably have one final episode this season going over the hire, talking about Dan Cole. That'll be coming up sometime in the next few days. Be sure to catch it.
Yeah, you guys took home a Michigan Association of Broadcasters
award
for that podcast.
We did. Number one collegiate radio talk show.
I am in the presence of greatness. J-Ruff, thank you so much.
No, I'm in the presence of greatness.
Stop, brother. Stop it. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will transition into a bit of Masters talk. Yeah, there was a little tournament called the Masters that wrapped up yesterday. The final round, Sergio Garcia finally has a major. We will also invite Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. She will talk about the atmosphere as we said goodbye to Joe Louis Arena yesterday. That and more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Was that fun or what yesterday? Not just the touching farewell to Joe Louis Arena, but I was glued to my TV watching the Masters on CBS. I couldn't turn the channel. Oh, Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia, who are really close friends, by the way, put on a show for the gallery at Augusta National in the final round of the Masters. I mean, I couldn't believe it watching it. Both players, of course, had a round of 72 in the final round. And it was just this back-and-forth camaraderie. You know, there was a moment where, you know, on the back nine were both players, you know, and it looked dire for a second. I must admit, when Sergio on the 10th and 11th hole, when he had back-to-back bogeys, I'm sitting there saying to myself, oh, my goodness, here we go. Sergio was collapsing. We have seen this before, right? But all of a sudden, he wakes up. On the 14th, he makes a birdie. And on the 15th is when he had the eagle three, and then it was on like Donkey Kong. On the 15th and 16th, Jay Rose had back-to-back birdies, and it got really interesting because, and it was so fun to watch the gallery approaching the 18th hole because the gallery, who was on the 18th hole awaiting both Rose and Garcia to play the 18th, they were looking up at the score on the, I don't even know what you call it, kind of like a billboard-esque type thing. And when the score was changed to show that Justin Rose had bogeyed the 17th to tie things up, the gallery lost its mind. Heck, I lost my mind watching it. So, all things tied up, approaching the 18th, what is going to happen? The drama was off the charts. So, Sergio Garcia and Justin Rose both took the tee box. They both ended up actually parring the 18th hole. And that's what I was rooting for because I wanted to see a sudden death playoff. And then the drama happened, right? Both players get into opposite golf carts and they make the 3-minute drive. resetting the drama. And the gallery, oohs and ahs everywhere. Jim Nantz setting the scene for you with his smooth voice. And you guys saw what happened off the tee box. Justin Rose, his tee shot that went into the magnolia trees on the right, setting him up for a difficult approach shot where he had to punch out from the pine. Didn't go that far. Actually, his ball went about 1 or 2 yards above Sergio Garcia's initial tee shot. So you had Justin Rose playing from behind. And then, I was glued to my TV because we've seen Sergio Garcia just muck it up in years past, right? When it comes to major championships and clutch moments. Heck, the 2013 PGA Championship always is replayed in my mind where he had it and then took a ball for a drink and then bogeys and just basically gives up the PGA Championship back 4 years ago. But he stayed within his means. I mean, those were great shots. He stayed calm. Hit a great tee shot. Rose is playing from a shot behind. How about the approach shot from Sergio Garcia? When he hit that approach shot, I said, okay, Sergio is ready to finally win a major here. And Sergio, all he needed to do was just par the thing. And he ends up birdieing it to take home the green jacket. What a moment. He goes over to his fiance, a huge hug from her, and Rose and Garcia. And they had been doing this throughout the back nine, you know, just kind of talking to each other, giving each other encouragement and saying, hey, man, we're going back and forth. Let's go. I remember when Justin Rose, where he hit Garcia on the leg with his putter, and that was kind of a cool moment. And then on the back nine, I believe it was either 15th or 16th, both players hitting remarkable, remarkable tee shots. And you saw Sergio Garcia put his hand in back of himself to give Justin Rose a high five. And Justin Rose kind of trots up 2 yards to give him a high five. I mean, just a cool moment and a cool camaraderie that those two shared. Great sportsmanship. And afterwards, of course, Jay Rose was noticeably disappointed. But he said, hey, if you're going to lose to anybody on this tour, you'd want to lose to Sergio Garcia, a man who in 73 major starts had never won a major championship. And it took him 73 holes to do so at Augusta National. Beyond cool, to say the least. Real briefly here, I want to invite the man behind the glass, Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, before we bring on our second guest for today's Current Sports. Isaac, I know you're not a big golf guy, but, and I tweeted this out last night, no matter if you love the sport or you're not really into it, you had to tune in to watch that playoff at golf's most coveted tournament.
Well, and unfortunately, I did not at the time because I was at the scholarship competition for MSU, but I would have loved to see it. Sergio Garcia, not a man more deserving in the game of golf besides him, and to win the Masters, and like I think you said in the quick hit headliners, get the monkey off your back. That's the big deal in this, because sometimes once it rains, it pours. Like you said, nobody has really mucked it up more than Sergio Garcia in the past. So once he has this, then he's got the clutch gene. You know, sometimes it's just as simple as a light switch. You turn it on, you turn it off. But the thing is, once you get that first one down, sometimes you can never turn it back off. That's what maybe Garcia's got going forward. And it's interesting for all of us who do watch it occasionally, just to have this other fold in the golf game. You know, you had all these great young golfers coming up, such as Ricky Fowler or Jordan Spieth, whoever it might be. Now you've got another guy who's in the competition, game in, game out. But now he actually is, in my opinion, as lethal of a threat to win it as anybody else. So it's really an interesting time, and it's good for the game of golf going forward to have a new face added to the green jacket list.
Yeah, and in most cases, it is an old face. He's been playing in this tournament for so long and finally gets to win, right? And speaking of Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, both of them ended up tied for 11th. Charles Schwartzel, he was in third place, and Matt Kuchar, who had a crazy hole-in-one on the back nine, I believe that was on the 15th hole, he finished tied for fourth along with Thomas Peters. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Again, we are taking your thoughts and calls on, again, folks, the final game at the Joe, held yesterday. The Wings topping the New Jersey Devils in electric atmosphere that I witnessed via my television. We right now have a woman who was there in person. She is a Detroit Red Wings beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press, Helene St. James. Helene, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Great to hear your voice, and thanks for joining us this afternoon. I just want you to first comment on what the atmosphere was like. I commented at the very beginning of the hour about how there was a red carpet before puck drop, a lot of fans lining both sides of the red carpet to take pictures and to get autographs with some of the great Red Wings alum. For you as a reporter to enter that building for one final time to cover the Red Wings, what was that like for you?
Well, it was a very special day for sure. I got there around noon, and as you mentioned, fans already were lining up on the red carpet. Players past and present started arriving around 2 p.m. Couldn't have asked for better weather, just beautiful sunshine, very mild day, perfect for being outdoors. And then, segueing into last game at the Joe, and perfectly enough, it was Henrik Zetterberg's thousands of his career. Got a nice ceremony for him before the game. And then, you know, they managed to win, and perfectly enough, Riley Sheahan, who's gone the entire season without scoring, scores twice and is the answer to the trivia question of who scored the last goal of the Joe. So, and then a great ceremony afterwards.
Yeah, and, you know, I saw that stat about Riley Sheahan. I mean, didn't score all year, and then he gets two last night. That was a bit odd. I couldn't believe that. But after 38 years at the Joe, the Wings will now move to Little Caesars Arena. What will you miss about the Joe? And how many years have you been covering the Wings, Helene?
Yeah, I started covering them in 96. So, You know, I mean, a lot of great memories working in that building, that's for sure. And, you know, saw a lot of the players that I got to cover over the years. Last night, Mike Vernon was back, Steve Yzerman, Nicholas Lidstrom, Thomas Holmstrom. It's fun to see all of those guys. Darren McCarty, of course, it was fun. McCarty and Ciccarelli and Holmstrom came out as part of the ice crew during one of the breaks in the game. So it was just, I think it was something more than 60 alumni and former coaches, Scotty Bowman, of course, there for a speech at night, who showed up. So you can tell how much the organization and the building meant to all the people who've been such a part of the history there.
After 38 years, the move will take place now, Helene. For a lot of media I talked to, we actually had Richard Kincaid on the show last week, and he said, you know what, Al, I've been waiting for this for I don't know how long, because the press box isn't the greatest press box. But for you as a media member, how much are you looking forward to the move about a mile away to Little Caesars Arena?
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be state-of-the-art and, you know, an incredible experience all the way around. So I've yet to see any of it in person, so I look forward to that. You know, I mean, as for the press box as a Joe, yeah, it's probably the most intimate one in the NHL. You can't walk two people shoulder by shoulder. It's that narrow. But, you know, it is, on the other hand, pretty much the last row in the upper bowl, and so you really feel a part of the whole atmosphere. It's not like some rinks where you're hanging way up under the rafters, or you're so far removed from the, you know, the stands. So it's been a great view. So I've enjoyed working there, and at the same time, yeah, absolutely. You know, I look forward to seeing everybody who's seen it raves about how fantastic the new building is. So I can't wait to see it in September.
Helene, what was your favorite moment from last night? What was the most emotional moment last night for you?
I would have to say when Doug Brown wheeled Vladimir Konstantinov out onto the ice. I mean, 20 years since his career tragically ended in that limousine accident the week after they won the Stanley Cup. That, and then, you know, the chance for Steve Yzerman when he came out as well. I mean, you can tell he will always forever be Detroit's, be a part of Detroit's heart. I mean, how much he meant to the city and the team, but just seeing Konstantinov and the reaction from fans as well. I mean, just, you know, that was an emotional point for sure.
Yeah, I saw that. And Konstantinov, again, whose career ended, as you mentioned, Helene, after that limousine accident back in June of 1997, to see him back in the house, wow. I mean, that certainly is a moment that many people have brought up since last night. And you know, Stevie Y, he mentioned, you know, he's now the GM of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He mentioned that, you know, and he just commended the organization for having an incredible streak of 25 years of making the playoffs. And now in the Joe's last season, the Red Wings won't make the postseason. Kind of fitting, kind of a change of a chapter, right? Starting a new book here at Little Caesars Arena, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was a important thing for him to say because his Tampa Bay Lightning had just been eliminated the day before from the playoffs, and they were certainly many of people's preseason pick to win the Cup. Probably no bigger upset as far as who has missed the playoffs than the Lightning. So he knows how hard it is. As he mentioned, he can attest to it both from the standpoint of being a player and being a general manager. As far as the Wings missing, you know, I mean, there's a realization within the team, within the front office, higher up in the organization, that this was going to be a tough season. I mean, other teams, you know, that there's so much parity now and there's so many other good teams. And we saw it came down to the last weekend, as usual, for all the playoffs to be set. That's how competitive it is. You know, 20 years ago, it used to be there was so much more separation. So, you know, the Wings just, I mean, they ran out of talent to keep them playoff competitive. I mean, it was Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk coming in 2001 and 2002 that really bought them another 10 years of that playoff streak because they were able to lift up, you know, Yzerman and Shanahan as they got into their mid-30s and beyond. And those two picks turned out to be incredible, incredible players. They don't have those in the system now. They don't have anybody now helping out. I mean, Powell left last summer. They don't have somebody of that caliber helping out Zetterberg now.
And with that being said, Helene, I mean, what do you foresee next season for this team? I mean, where does the improvement must happen in order for this squad to be yet again a playoff contender?
Well, you know, it's come up before, but, you know, they really need to take a hard look at what they might have to give up to get to upgrade on defense, because that's something that they absolutely need more than anything, is to get a good defenseman. They're not going to be able to pry, you know, a number one from anybody. I mean, and that's part of why they've now also taken it. You know, a slide is really since 2012, since Nicholas Lidstrom retired. I mean, those kind of defensemen just don't come along more than once in a generation. So they need to upgrade defense. But, you know, to be fair, if they could just have stayed a little bit healthier this season, if Jimmy Howard hadn't gotten hurt, who knows, we might be talking about, you know, their first-round playoff matchup. I mean, he was playing the best hockey of his career when he got hurt in mid-December. And at the same time, Peter Mrazek had a terrible December, continued that into January. It really wasn't until February Peter started playing well. And on top of that, too, their power play went 3 months without converting on the road. If you don't have goaltending and if you don't have special teams, you're not going anywhere in today's NHL. So now the good news for them is Peter played much better down the stretch. Jimmy continued to play well after he got back from his injury, and the power play started clicking. So if they can carry that kind of confidence into next season, I think they're a lot closer to becoming competitive again if they tinker a little bit with the lineup as well.
Very well put. Final question for you here, Helene. The Joe hosted his first event December 12th, 1979, a basketball game actually between the University of Michigan and the University of Detroit. And its first NHL game was 15 days later, December 27th, when the Wings played the St. Louis Blues. For you, Helene, a reporter who's covered this team since the mid-90s, what is your favorite memory at the famed Joe Louis Arena?
Well, probably when they won the Cup in 97. I mean, it was just, you could just see the emotion and the players, especially someone like Steve Yzerman, who had been through such tough times. And, I mean, the fans just ending that 42-year drought. That one probably stands out among a lot of amazing games I've seen there.
Yeah, you hear that when I asked that question, favorite memories at the Joe, a lot of people bring up that 1997 Stanley Cup win. Again, it had taken, you know, it's been 42 years prior to that year. So fitting for sure. Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. Helene, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
My pleasure, anytime.
Let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports by briefly talking about the Detroit Pistons saying goodbye to the Palace of Auburn Hills tonight, and we will have your weekend winners. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports here on WKAR AM 870 FM 94.5. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We have been paying tribute to the Detroit Red Wings all hour. Just finished up a chat with Helene St. James, Detroit Red Wings beat reporter for the Detroit Free Press. And we began the hour with a chat with Jason Ruff, MSU hockey beat reporter for Impact Sports, as it is being reported that Danton Cole will be Michigan State's newest hockey coach. How about that? Less than 10 minutes left in the show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. I know, Isaac, you're a big NBA fan. Want to bring this up very briefly. Russell Westbrook hits number 42. He breaks the Big O's triple-double record. He's averaging a triple-double officially now for a season, the first time that's happened since the 60s. That was also a year where the Big O didn't even win the NBA's Most Valuable Player. I'm curious whether or not your MVP vote has swayed. A few stats I want to bring up after you answer that.
It has swayed. It's still up in the air. Let's say this. At the All-Star break, I was 100% James Harden. I don't think his team is that much worse than Russell Westbrook's or that much better than Russell Westbrook's. I think they're relatively on that same level. I thought Harden did more in terms of the W's, and he still is. He's the 3 seed in the West. He'll be playing Russell in the first round of the playoffs. Therefore, Harden's got the wins. But the way Russ has been playing recently, maybe he goes for the triple-doubles, gets a couple rebounds, all of that. But the thing that convinced me was not the triple-double. It was the shot last night. Did you see that?
I saw it.
The shot of the season, get him 50 points, get him a triple-double, and maybe get him an MVP, because that is an MVP play. Every MVP has his moment. If Russ wins, that shot might be why.
And more importantly, it gave the Thunder the win. He's so competitive, dude. That's what I love about Russ. I mean, the numbers are cool, but Russ is going out there competing to win. The numbers just come with the product. Simple as that. But you know what? On the flip side of that, I want to bring this up. There was an interesting debate that took place on Fox Sports Radio this morning when discussing the Russell Westbrook MVP conversation. Colin Cowherd, actually, beside me, I mean, this dude has Russell third because he's a voter.
LeBron second?
LeBron is one. LeBron one, Kawhi second, Russell Westbrook third. Harden isn't even in his top three, dude. Colin Cowherd
stirring up controversy.
Exactly, that's what Colin does. But he brought up some stats to try and back his argument, and I found these to be interesting stats just to ponder. When Russell Westbrook shoots 33% or less this season, well, I should say, just to throw this number out there, he actually has shot 33% 20 times this year or less. 33% or less 20 times this season. To put that in perspective in regards to LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James has only done that once. Kawhi Leonard, 6 times.
Wow.
That's interesting, isn't it? He shot 33% or less is really, really bad. He's done that 20 times this year. So we're talking about a high volume shooter for sure when discussing Russell Westbrook. But also, when Russ is not the team's leading shooter, when he's not leading the team when it comes to field goal attempts, his team has won 7 of 10 games. Take that for what it's worth. I think it's unfair, though, when you look at those stats. And this is what I said about, you know, Colin Cowherd's argument this morning. It varies from team to team to team. Russ has to do so much for this team. His supporting cast is not the greatest supporting cast. Without Russ having to take those shots, more times than not, his teams lose. Simple as that.
Well, and you and I have made this debate before. Russ can be profligate on the court. He can be a little bit wasteful time to time. Nobody's saying he isn't. The usage rates are the highest ever in the NBA, followed by Harden this year as well. Both of the guys live by that mantra. Here's the thing, though. They win. They are effective at the end of the day. This was a Thunder team that I was unsure of whether they made the playoffs. Let's not forget, too, Russ is just 3 years removed from a ACL surgery. This is a guy still not recovering, but who had to go through so much, and to play like the way he is absolutely unfathomable. But when you break it down, yes, LeBron's always done this stuff like that. The thing is, LeBron does have a better team. He's got Kyrie on a wing, Kevin Love in a corner. It really helps when you've got guys to spread out so that, you know what, if you're not shooting well, like Russ wasn't when he got 41, when he went 6 of 25 and they asked him if he was just chasing the records, then you can pass the ball. And that's what LeBron has. That's what Kawhi has. That's what Russ and Harden don't have quite as much.
Let's close out each and every Monday's Current Sports like we always do. We take a look at the weekend that was in the sporting world, and to bring to you who we thought had the best weekend in sports and beyond, we call it Weekend Winners.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, I got a few here, Isaac. Of course, I got to start with my man Sergio Garcia. And Sergio was great. He was great. I mean, his first major in 73 starts. Historic. I love the Masters. Again, it's fourth, actually third on my sporting event all-time list. And I got to at least cover the Masters or go to it as a fan, because I've got a man crush on Augusta National. Unbelievable tournament. What an atmosphere. Congrats to Sergio. Tim Tebow, homers for the second time in three games with the Mets Class A team, the Columbia Fireflies. That's shocking to a lot of people, including myself. I tell you, Tim Tebow, he never ceases to amaze me. Also, farewell to the Joe. Joe Louis Arena was clearly a winner in its final game against the Red Wings hosting the New Jersey Devils. What an atmosphere it was. So emotional last night for a lot of Red Wings fans out there. And also, I'm wearing my Detroit Pistons cap. The Pistons will say goodbye to the Palace of Auburn Hills tonight. Looking forward to watching that one, not for the game, but for the tribute to the Palace itself. Isaac.
Lest we forget, too, that the Pistons, yes, the Red Wings have been wildly successful, got all sorts of hype. The Palace has been such a promised land for the Pistons as well. What, three ships there? Multiple finals appearances.
They won the back-to-backs in the 80s, yeah.
Two finals appearances, right. All of that. They've been wildly successful. Also, Russ, come on, breaking the record, getting into the playoffs, maybe an MVP.
All right, folks, we'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a great afternoon. It is beautiful here in mid-Michigan. Take care and be easy, people.